province. Welcome. Mr. Uku, my name is Marinsha Gillian. I'm the chairperson of this panel, and I would ask the members of the panel to introduce themselves.
Good morning, Mr. Uku. My name is Dikgang Stok. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, also a member of the subcommittee dealing with the interviews. Thanks.
Good morning, Mr. Uko. My name is Bridget Masango. I'm the member of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development and a member of the subcommittee. You are welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Uko. I'm Dalmain Christians. I'm a member of the Select Committee for the Social Cluster as well as for the subcommittee.
Good morning. My name is Audra Malika, a member of the Select Committee and the subcommittee.
Just waiting on Member Aris to introduce herself.
My humble apologies. Morning, I'm Letitia Aris, member of the Portfolio Social Development. Welcome. Sorry for the delay.
For this interview, and can you tell us a bit about yourself and why are you interested in committing your time and energy to serve on the CDA board? And then if you are appointed, what will you bring into the work of the CDA? And if you feel comfortable, you can remove your mask.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I feel more comfortable without the mask so that I can speak well, and I feel safe with the distances that we have and appreciate your invitation to come here. Thank you. My details are mostly on my CV. I have the necessary experience going back for decades in local government with governance. I have qualifications in language from WITS University as well as international qualifications in language from Intersol in the United Kingdom. I have legal qualifications from UNISA in provincial and local government law and constitutional law. I'm a member, so I understand law and am familiar with the application of law and indeed the drafting of legislation. I'm a member of the International Police Association, so I have enforcement knowledge and experience. And I'm a member of the International Society for Substance Use Professionals. There are a few other things, but I think that's enough to indicate that I have the experience and the qualifications. What will I bring to the table? Apart from knowledge and experience, because I've served on the board now for 7 years, I know how it works. Particularly, I know the shortcomings, Madam Chair, and I believe that I know how to overcome those shortcomings. What that depends on is the other members of the board. If we have strong members, then we can make progress. What do I bring to the table? My desire to save life. That's my principal objective for doing most of the things that I do with my community work and my work in public health, is to save life. And life means to save lives, to save individuals, to save families, and to save the environment. The most important thing that I bring to the table and to the committee, and that I will continue to expose all the time, is passion. I don't think there's any question about my passion, passion, passion to save life.
Thank you, Mr. Uko. Can I ask Member Aris, are you ready?
Mr. Unka, am I pronouncing this the name right? Go. The Central Drug Authority
was established by an Act of Parliament. Which Act is that, and what does the Act seek to achieve? You have 5 minutes to answer this.
Thank you, Madam MP. The Act is the Prevention and Treatment of Substance Abuse Act. It's number 70 of 2008. Although it only came into force when it was promulgated on the 21st of April 2009. To see what this Act seeks to achieve, one would first look at the preamble, and the preamble talks about the international global problem of substance abuse and the growing problem of substance abuse in South Africa. And then mainly it talks about the dealing with substance users, their treatment, and their reintegration into society. That's in the preamble. The Act itself in Section 53 establishes the Central Drug Authority and has some rules of that. Under Section 54, it establishes the Executive Committee, and there are some rules that it must be not less than 7, but not more than 10 members. Very importantly, Section 55 establishes a Secretariat. And the Secretariat is required to support the work of the Central Drug Authority, and indeed it says that it must support the work and all incidental matters as required by the Central Drug Authority. And I say as required by the Central Drug Authority with emphasis, because that's one of the huge problems that the Central Drug Authority has had, is that the administration which is there to support it does not entirely support it. In fact, they often oppose it. So when we get to the next term, if I'm there, I will ensure that we get better support and therefore better results from the Central Drug Authority. There are some other statements regarding the work of the Central Drug Authority and some rules in the Act. Essentially, that is it.
Thank you. My other question to you, in your own assessment, do you think that the CDA performed its mandate efficiently? If yes, how so? And if not, what are the shortcomings? You can highlight both with regards to its mandate as well as ensuring compliance, accountability and monitoring development and implementation of the department's drug master plan by national and provincial drug master plans by provincial forums. How are you proposing to address these shortcomings?
You have 8 minutes.
You've
got 8 minutes in this conversation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a clock, so you'll have to guide me. The answer to the first question, because there are many questions there, is that the Central Drug Authority is both successful in some areas and largely unsuccessful in other areas. I would believe that this committee understands that we are less successful than in actual fact we really are, and I can explain that. We are required to do many things. One of them is an annual report. The Act requires us to submit that report to the Minister no later than the last day of August in every year. And largely we've managed to achieve that. Once or twice we've done it in September, but largely we achieve that. But you don't know that as a committee. What happens is that the annual report gets held up in the system by the administration. And it might take 2 or 3 months even to get to the minister. And then the minister might take 2 or 3 or 4 months to submit it to this committee. So this committee thinks that we are 6 or 7 or 8 months late, whereas in fact we've been on time. The Act requires the minister to submit it to Parliament within 14 days. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen and we have no control over it. How do we improve that? One of the things that I can do is advise this committee every year. I'm prepared to do it every quarter about what our progress is, but every year send an email to all the members of the committee and through the chairman a notification saying our annual report has been submitted, and then you know that it's been submitted, and every hold up after that is out of our hands. And it all indicates that the Central Drug Authority requires more independence and being taken out of the Department of Social Development. There's no question about that whatsoever. As far as implementation is concerned, we need to liaise more with departments. And therein lies another problem with us lying administratively within the Department of Social Development. When we write to representatives of the departments on the committee or to the Central Drug Authority, the line of communication should be from the DG of the Department of Social Development to other DGs. It doesn't lie within the hands of the representative. They just come and report to the Central Drug Authority. So when we say, write a letter and tell them it's a deadline for the report on this date, the letter goes out to the representatives. But the department administrative staff know that it should go to the DG and ask our DG to write to other DGs, because it's the DGs and the ministers who are responsible ultimately. So that's a line of communication that we would have to follow and ensure that it gets followed. But once it leaves the Central Drug Authority, it's in the administrative hands, and we don't have any control over that. I believe, however, that the current Director General, Linton Mkunu, is more favorable to the activities of the Central Drug Authority and is much more likely to ensure that the support that we need is in fact given to us. I can emphasize, for example, the fact that there's a lack of support and has been for years in, for example, what's happened today. I was told last night by a member of the current board who was on the shortlist that she's withdrawn. Now you should ask yourself why she withdrew. And the reason is that she doesn't want to continue to be abused and bullied and exploited by the departmental staff, because that's what happens. I can deal with that in the future. The chairman has the same views, and I'm sure he's expressed this to you in certain meetings. He certainly expressed it in the last meeting of the executive committee. So we will overcome those shortcomings, certainly with the help of the Director General. Have I answered fully, or is there another element? Because there were many questions which you asked, Madam MP.
I was asking in terms of compliance, accountability, monitoring, development and implementation, and then in terms of the shortcomings. Yeah.
As I mentioned, Madam MP, the requirement and the responsibility comes from the Minister and the Director Generals of various departments. We know from the last assessment of the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation that only three departments at that time, and I think that was in 2015, only three departments had their own departmental mini drug master plans. And that's because the responsibility hasn't been placed on the DGs and the MPs by the Central Drug Authority via the administration. And I think we can do that. If the lines of communication are right, then the departments will have it. And if we liaise with them more appropriately and more thoroughly, as we are required to do, without restrictions from the administration, then we will achieve more success on implementation at grassroots level. The Central Drug Authority itself doesn't work at grassroots level, but through the departments and through the provinces is where we get to the grassroots level with provincial drug active forums and with local drug action committees. That needs to receive more attention, and it will do.
Sorry. Do you think, just share with us your view in terms of what you think the powers of the CDA, is the powers of the CDA sufficient, or what do you think?
Unquestionably, no. They are not sufficient. The CDA is limited and hampered by its placement within the Department of Social Development. And I'll give you another example. We have rules of governance which were published in the Government Gazette in 2007. very shortly after we took office, we realized that the rules of governance need to be changed and improved so that there was more clarity as to how we would work and what we would do, what constitutes a quorum, how voting would take place. All the small mundane issues of management and administration to make an organization successful. We drafted those rules from approximately 2018, I think. We kept asking for those rules to be brought to the Executive Committee and to the Central Drug Authority so that we could finalize them and approve them and have them published in the Government Gazette, because that's what has to be done to make them official. Those rules were never presented to us. Okay, may I just finish that comment? They were never presented to us, and we found out only this month that the Chief Director said that they should be held over until the new Act is promulgated. And that's not his duty, it's our duty, and it should have been brought back to us, but again, we were hampered.
Next question.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Uko, the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 represents a multisectoral approach to create a South Africa free from the harms associated with drug use, drug misuse, drug abuse. The plan observes national and international plans and conventions to ensure respect and dignity of all the people of this country. So if you are appointed as a member of the authority, you will be expected to implement the authority's mandate. Now, what I would like you to share with the committee, with the panel, is your understanding of the objectives of the National Drug Master Plan 2019-2024 and how you think the CDA should achieve those objectives. We have 8 minutes to discuss that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, the National Drug Master Plan, which we have now, is a huge departure from the past concepts of National Drug Master Plan. It deals, of course, as required in the Act, with harm reduction, demand reduction, and supply reduction, and within the Act is mentioned prevention. I believe that the larger key lies in prevention, because if we prevent, imagine utopia, if we prevented every single person from starting to use drugs and got the current users to stop, then we have no need for harm reduction, demand reduction, or supply reduction, because if nobody's taking drugs, that would be utopia. So I believe that the key is in preventative programs. The way that that needs to be done is, again, to liaise with all the other departments, and they're all important, sport and recreation, arts and culture, certainly education at all levels, because we ask ourselves, why do people start taking drugs? People of all ages. It's because in the youth, lack of activity, lack of things to keep them busy, lack of things to keep them interested, and lack of things to keep them excited. If we involve arts and culture and we have drama schools and singing classes, dancing lessons, they'll have activities to keep them interested and inspired to do more and to grow, and they're less likely to get onto drugs. It's the same with adults. If they have activities to keep them busy, hobbies, whatever it is, sport is also the same thing in arts and culture and activities and acting, playing sport, participating in sport, being a fan of sport, something that keeps adults busy. It's the family problems and the stress of society and the stress of living that gets people into the use of drugs, excessive use and abuse of drugs that disturb their minds and disturb the balance in their psyche. So we need to address all those other issues by liaising with all those departments so we can introduce those programs. It requires talking, first of all, to the DGs, and to get in each department a team who's prepared to work. It requires talking to the provinces, and particularly the Act requires that mayors in cities establish local drug action committees. That's where it starts to help at the grassroots. If we can do that and liaise with mayors, then we can increase. The audit of the local drug action committees was abominable. There are many towns that don't have any. There are many provinces that don't have any. And it's sad that that is the case, because that's where the connection with the community takes place. So we would have to liaise with mayors of all the towns and the cities, and probably do that through SALGA and other, that's the local government association. The link to get them to fund those mandates, because the cities say that they don't have any funds, but the local action drug action committees do need to have those funds. Have I covered all of that? Because there is more that we can do and go into. This current National Drug Master Plan is certainly more implementable than in the past. It has a much more human rights approach. The old school of punitive action against abusers and users of drugs has been replaced by a human rights approach, by recognizing that the users of drugs are there for a reason, that addiction is not, oh, you're a bad boy, you're an addict, you're a cokehead. That's not the current approach. It's recognized that addiction is a disease of the brain, a chronic disease of the brain, which is treatable but not curable. And if we approach it from that point of view, then we have a much better chance of getting a result. Less punitive approach. If you look at the statistics, in crime and violence against women and rape and those sort of things, the conviction rate is about 3% or something. It's dreadfully low. The conviction rate in drug offenses is about 47%. And it's because it's an easy target for the police. Some guy's an addict, and so you catch him with a drug and you incarcerate him. We need rather to treat them and to reintegrate them into society. That would be the better approach. And then we can focus energies of law enforcement onto gender-based violence and rape of children, abuse of children, human trafficking, all the important things that we have to do, which will free the law enforcement authorities when we deal with the drug problem.
Mr. Uko, the plan also observes international conventions, and I would like you to share with us how you think that observation of international conventions would help the CDA to actually implement the mandate of the plan.
Well, certainly there are organizations like UNGAS, and UNODC, which is the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. They have a lot of statistics and information and the ability to support what the Central Drug Authority does. And we can do with their support, and we can use their support. There's also UNODC's report, the World Drug Report of 2020, has a lot of information in it on statistics and how we can use. If you read the executive summary, the report, Madam Chair, by the way, comes in 6 volumes plus 2 annexes. The first volume is the executive summary, which really outlines what and how we can do. And we can go into details of that, and particularly why it must be done. The other 5 documents deal with the supply of drugs and the routing, and Africa, South Africa particularly, has become a point of manufacturing and transit for drugs to other countries and use. Our use is growing exponentially. It's quite disheartening, in fact. There's another volume which deals with treatment and the users of reintegration into society and other matters related to drug use and substance abuse. The last is an annexure with a lot of information about sources and 1 volume with data. Data is important so that we can look at the data, particularly to South Africa, and know that we can apply that in South Africa in order to save lives.
Right. The next question speaks to the previous master plan, which is 2013-2017. There was a need to conduct an evaluation that was prioritized to assess how it was implemented. And subsequent to that, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, in partnership with the Department of Social Development, commissioned an evaluation of the implementation of a National Drug Master Plan 2013-2017, which took place in August 2015 and January 2016. So the question would be, what were the key findings of that evaluation, of that implementation evaluation, and the recommendations, as it were?
Thank you, Madam MP. Yes, Madam Chair, we participated in that actively. The Department of Monitoring and Evaluation really did a fine job in looking at all the presentations that we made to them and other departments. The key findings were several. The one is that the National Drug Master Plan at that time was too high level and had too few areas that were easy and possible to implement. So the implementation possibilities of the National Drug Master Plan were too high level. It found that provinces were not sufficiently involved with their own provincial mini drug master plans, and certainly, as I mentioned earlier, only three departments had their own drug master plans for those departments. We need to make sure that every department has it and is committed to it. We need that commitment and, as I mentioned earlier, the passion. There were three findings or recommendations. Those are the findings that I've just mentioned. Inter alia, that it was not implementable and that the departments didn't have their own plans. The recommendations were only three. The first one was that the Central Drug Authority needs to be autonomous and have independence. It gave a few details about that, but that's something that we've known for years. About 15 years ago, Deloitte and Touche wrote a report which said basically that the Central Drug Authority must be taken out of the Department of Social Development and must be independent and have its own autonomy. The second recommendation was that the National Drug Master Plan should be reviewed. Quite rightly, the law actually requires us to review that every 5 years, and that we've done, and you now have the 2019-2014 plan, which is much more implementable, has taken a completely different approach to develop that plan. By the way, we consulted for the first time with users of drugs. We went into the streets and met users and spoke to them about what they wanted and what they needed, and they told us about their problems. Lockly integrated. The last recommendation, if I may mention, was funding for the Central Drug Authority.
Members, Maleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to check what is your understanding of good governance, including its main features, and how would you ensure good governance in the CDA?
Good governance starts with ethics. Everybody must have the right ethical principles, and there's no deviation from what that means in order to ensure good governance. What is then required is rules. We have some rules in the Act, that Act 70 of 2008, and we have some rules that were, they are governance rules that were published in the Government Gazette in 2007. Those rules need to be improved and strengthened and clarified. As I said, we have a draft document which needs to be improved, but was held up by the line function for the pending act, which is going to be changed. And we were only told that at our meeting on the 26th of October. We need to go through those rules. They themselves need to be redrafted and re-edited, because with time, nothing is perfect. And with time, we've recognized that there are other things that need to be changed. So good rules, and then a strong team to implement those rules, apply them, and abide by them. There are other things that apply, such as the King IV report and matters that would relate to general good governance overall. But when the Central Drug Authority good governance, it requires understanding government and departmental systems, dealing with budgets, which we at the moment don't have access to, and that's why we need to be autonomous and independent from the Department of Social Development. We have the rules, we apply them, and a good team will make sure that they work.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mr. Uko, my question is, what are the key issues affecting young people, their families and communities regarding drug and substance abuse, and how would you advise the government to deal with these issues? You have 3 minutes.
I think the major issue is boredom, family problems, unemployment, as I mentioned before. If we can get the youth involved in many other activities, they won't be tempted to use drugs. They use drugs for reasons, and they boredom. They want to escape, and unfortunately, it's a bad escape. It would be much better to escape into a productive pursuit, like sport, playing football for a team, or any other sport which they like, but that requires facilities. You need football fields and tennis courts, basketball courts, you need big halls for judo, for gymnastics, for badminton. There's a lot of things that the youth can do, and we need to make sure that that's done. We need to have better education so that the youth are encouraged and given the ability to make good choices. We must make healthy choices, easier choices for the youth. That's the key issue. A separate issue is to deal with the drugs and the drug trafficking and the criminals and the drug lords. That's not in the hands of the Central Drug Authority, it's in the hands of organizations such as the Hawks and certainly the South African Police Service. They have to deal with that, but that's one of the issues. Let's deal with it at root level. The people who use drugs, encourage them to make healthy choices, make those healthy choices easy, give them diversions to do other activities and not be tempted into getting a high, which is temporary and never works. Employment is a key issue. If parents are employed, then they can afford to buy sporting equipment, football boots and things for their children. So that's a key issue, and we need to liaise with the Department of Trade and Industry on that score and all the other departments that can contribute to improving the employment levels and certainly reducing our unacceptably high unemployment levels that we are experiencing.
Thanks, Chairperson. In your opinion, what is the state of public rehab centers in the country? Are there any challenges with regards to access to public rehab centers in South Africa? If yes, what are those challenges, and how would you advise the country to address those challenges?
The basic answer is that the treatment centers are not good. They're not operating well, they're overcrowded, and the waiting lists in the public treatment centers, the government-owned and run treatment centers, is too long. Even if a court sends someone to a treatment center, they can't get in there on the court order because there's a six-month waiting list, and that's a tragedy. So we need to have more treatment centers, and in those treatment centers we must have more trained, better trained and better motivated staff. If we get back to the prevention level, if we do that right, we will need fewer treatment centers. But that's not a problem, because treatment centers can always be converted into local clinics and other areas that can help people. But the state of the treatment centers is not great. In the public sector, we have many treatment centers that are functioning poorly. It's an area where the drug addicts go and target people because they know, the drug dealers go and target people because they know they're addicts, they're being treated. There are some, too many, treatment centers that are not even registered. We need to deal with that. I've got no problem with private treatment centers, but they need to be regulated, they must be registered, and they must be doing a good job. The key issue with all those centers is not the treatment and to get people off drugs. The key issue is to reintegrate them into society and keep them off drugs.
And I just to follow up on that question, Mr. Uko, as a previous board member, the issue of the treatment and prevention campaigns, the CDA board, what was your recommendation to the department or to the minister on that one previously?
One of the key recommendations was to have a treatment center, at least one in every province. I don't know what the status is at the moment because the reports have not come to us. Again, it's through the administrative processes and the support staff of the Central Drug Authority that we do not get that information. There was a treatment center opened in KwaZulu-Natal very recently, but despite those treatment centers being opened, we still have a shortage. There are waiting lists and people cannot get in. They want to. Families motivate their children, for example, who are on drugs, to go for treatment. You can't force anybody to go. It just won't be effective. But if they are willing to go into a treatment center today, then they must be treated whilst they are willing, not in 6 months' time when they think, oh, there's no point. And so we need to increase the number of treatment centers and the number of trained staff to do it. We need to deal with the chemical treatments such as methadone and naloxone, so that the users can easily get off the drugs on which they're addicted. The problem is that we mustn't go on and on with these programs. For example, needle exchange is, I think, a very good method of reducing harm. We address things like blood-transmitted diseases like hepatitis and HIV by giving users clean needles. But that can't happen in perpetuity. We need to get from the users a commitment to abstinence. They must make the decision that eventually they'll get off the drugs completely. And that's the way we will succeed in the long term. That requires, again, reintegration and keeping them busy, entertained, and employed, and off the streets. We need to solve the family problems that give rise to drug addiction as well.
Thank you, Mr. Uka. Is it now Ms. Aris? Are you next?
Mr. Uka, one of the challenges facing the country is a lack of comprehensive national statistics on the prevalences of substance and drug abuse. How can the CDA play a role in this regard?
There are several levels that can be taken there. First of all, we have the Medical Research Council, and they run a program, SACENDU, the South African National Community Epidemiological Drug Research. And we need to expand the number of clinics and treatment centers, private and government, which provide input into the SACENDU reports. We need to do that more regularly. The SACENDU reports are great. We need to expand the base of information so that we have more accurate information. As far as the Central Drug Authority is concerned, it's a principle in the National Drug Master Plan that we base all things that we do on evidence and on science. Now I'll tell you what happened at the Central Drug Authority in the past. We had a member called Dan Steyn, Professor Dan Steyn, who was the head of our research unit. He repeatedly submitted programs for research and budgets for funding that research and repeatedly got nothing because the budgets that we submitted, and I saw the same thing, I head up the Communications and Marketing Committee. Every year I submit a budget of what we want to do and how much money we need to do it, and that budget never gets passed the administrative unit with whom we liaise into the finance and the greater budget of the Department of Social Development. So there's never been any funding for community and communications and marketing. It's the same with research. There's never been any funding despite our request for budget. What happened to Dan Steyn? Like the member who withdrew last night, he threw his hands up after about 3 years and said, that's it, enough, I'm not taking this abuse, I'm not taking a dead end, and he resigned. We stayed on to fight that, and we can make progress, but we need independence.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Ugo. Recently, there's been a much debate around the court judgment, the constitutional court judgment on the decriminalization of marijuana, cannabis, and all of that. So I would like you to share your opinion with the panel regarding that court judgment. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, MP Stock. It was a constitutional court ruling, not necessarily a judgment. It was a slightly different thing in law. And they ruled that there were certain portions of the Act which were unconstitutional and gave the government 2 years to change those. The 2 years expired in September, but it's reaching the final stages now. I think that the ruling was good. I think that the decriminalization of private use, personal use, is better than the criminalization and punitive action taken against users. And that would apply to most drugs, not only cannabis. The Central Drug Authority has a policy statement on marijuana and cannabis. It was published recently in the South African Medical Journal. And it states simply things like the war on drugs has not been won, so the war on cannabis has not been done. We need to allow personal use, but we need to advise people that THC, which is the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is in cannabis, is a mind-altering addictive drug. So if they make a choice to use it, they must know that it is harmful in the long term. Users of cannabis have many problems. If we allow personal use, it needs to be controlled in many ways. And one of the ways is the medical use, which I think is appropriate. There are many uses of marijuana which have been scientifically proved to be good, but we need to know that it's controlled because there are various different plants and you don't know how much THCs are in a plant. Some can have more, some can have less. So if you control that medically, that a user of medical marijuana knows what he's taken and has a controlled dose and knows the benefits, then there is certainly good use for that. So overall, I think the ruling was good. The changes that the legislative is proposing and will come before Parliament, I'm sure, in the new year, if it hasn't been presented yet, are good. The personal use decriminalization is a good move, but itself needs to be managed in a way that doesn't affect others, because if an adult decides to use marijuana, the children in the household and other family members need to be protected, because any smoke, it doesn't matter if it's smoke from a briar or a cigarette or cannabis, any smoke in your lungs is harmful. The smoke from cannabis contains TCH, which is addictive and harmful, a mental, mind-altering drug. So that's the problem. We need to know again that people who make choices, the right choices for the right reasons.
Thank you. During the COVID-19 pandemic, government introduced a number of lockdown regulations to contain the spread of the virus. And then one of the regulations which I want you to focus on is the regulation on the ban of alcohol. It was also on the ban on tobacco. But our focus should be, I mean, your response should be more on the focus on the ban of alcohol. So I would like you, if you had to advise government, what was going to be your advice regarding the sale and ban during lockdown and any pandemic which might persist in the future? Thanks.
First of all, we should recognize that prohibition doesn't work. A ban on any product, and we see from America in the 1920s that prohibition doesn't work. It gave rise to the mafia and crime syndicates. So recognizing that it doesn't work overall. However, when we have a crisis like the COVID-19 pandemic, we need to deal with the realities of that crisis. And the banning of alcohol, I think, in the short term was a good thing. Because people get careless when they drink too much and they want to have parties and they get drunk and they lose control of themselves, and then you create an environment in which the virus could spread more easily. People will tend when they drink not to wear their masks or to get all excited and sing and shout. Now, as I'm talking to you, little droplets are coming out of my mouth. There's no question about that. But if I were singing or shouting like at a party, those droplets would carry further. So there is an increased risk. And I think that the ban on alcohol was a good thing in the short term. It also led immediately to a reduction in admissions to hospitals for violent crimes and injuries, certainly a reduction in rape and in women abuse and child abuse. There's no question about that. What I would advise the government to do, if it were ever to happen again, is to communicate more with the public. Because what happened is we banned alcohol. We didn't tell the public clearly why and give the public a motivation to stop drinking, or at least when they start again and alcohol is available, to drink less. South Africa has a bad reputation for binge drinking. A lot of people drink, but they drink less during the week, and on the weekend they binge, and that's where the bad things happen. That's when the violence happens. That's when car accidents happen. You know that we have 15,000 to 20,000 road deaths a year in South Africa, about 60% are alcohol related. We've got to reduce that. So the short-term ban was good and effective. It needed to come with information to get the public on our side or on government side to see and understand why the ban was required. And it's very similar with tobacco. It went on a little bit long. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Uku. Thank you to the panel for that question, Mr. Uku. Is there any question that you want to ask the panel?
I don't have a question, Madam Chair, per se. I'd like to give some input to the panel for consideration. The way I understand it at the moment is that I am the only sitting board member who is on the shortlist and having interviews. If I am not appointed, there will be no memory, no knowledge of what is wrong with the Central Drug Authority and how to fix it. We cannot lose that. And so my plea is to you to appoint me, not for my own benefit, because there's no real... well, I think... yeah. I think that every interviewee would have made the same statement. They all are here because they want to be appointed. But there are very strong reasons for me to be appointed because I know how it works, I know what the shortcomings are, and I know how we can overcome them. What it needs is a team. We need, what I'd like to see from this panel appointing, is people with the right qualifications, people who have the right background and the right desire to want to work. What I'd like to see is fiercely independent thinkers who can contribute enormously to the Central Drug Authority and its growth, but independent thinkers who have the willingness and the capacity to work as a team. So if I were appointed, the first thing I would recommend is that we have a three-day indaba very soon after the appointment of the board, hopefully within 3 months. We have a three-day indaba, and I will bring to that indaba a few things for the new members. One is an expert who will talk about the National Drug Master Plan, and I have an idea of who I would use there, so that the members can understand the National Drug Master Plan as it is now and start planning immediately for the next review. We need to know that the 2014-2029 Drug Master Plan starts now. We can't wake up in 2029 or 2024 and decide to make that plan. I would have a list of the current act that we want to change and what those changes are and why. There's a proposal that we change the name, which I think is ludicrous. The Central Drug Authority is a great name and says it all. I would have some required reading, for example, the World Drug Report. I would like to see every member get familiar with all the reports and the information that's available. Not learn over the next 5 years. We must learn quickly and then work and be successful over the next 5 years. I would like to see members introduce and this will be my last point, Madam Chair, if I may. We don't want to allocate people to committees. And we have four committees. We don't want to allocate someone to research who's not interested in research. So we should learn from the members who they are, we do that at the Indaba, and where their interests lie. Who wants to be on the research committee? Who wants to be on the governance committee? And allocate people to where they want to be. And that's where they'll make the best contribution. And I will add to that success. There's no question, Madam Chair, and I really am the only one with that memory of how to overcome the shortcomings. If I'm not there, the new members will be misled by the administration and they will make all the same mistakes over again. Please let that not happen.
Thank you, Mr. Ugo. Let me just appreciate your honesty, and let me just also appreciate that luckily we're in a democracy in this country, and I allow you, because of fairness, and I also allow you because I believe in freedom of speech. And I need to thank you for coming to this interview open-minded and with honesty. And from our side, we wish you luck and have a safe journey back home. Thank you. Members, we...